We're starting a new series. We've been had about a 12-week series thinking about welcome. We finished that last week, and we're now coming into a new series, which is just 3 weeks leading us up to the summer holidays. And it's a series we did a couple of years ago, a series with this sort of title, The Difference Jesus Makes. The Difference Jesus Makes. And we try and take issues that are issues in the world or issues that we face and come and approach them and say, well, what difference does it make being a follower of Jesus to these issues, to how we face these things in life, in the world? So over the next 3 weeks, we're going to look at the difference that Jesus makes to money, the difference Jesus makes to how we handle our money and what we do with it, our attitude to finance, and the difference Jesus makes to grief. What difference does it make being a follower of Jesus when we come and we face grief and loss? And today, perhaps ironically, we're looking at the difference Jesus makes to climate change. And obviously this is a little bit of a different approach than we might normally have on a Sunday morning. And in fact, it will be a little bit different as we tackle these issues and slightly different things over the next few weeks and different ways that we come and approach these issues. As we think about climate change, I think it's kind of important that we begin by actually talking about what it is that we mean by climate change. What is it that actually we're really talking about when we come and we face this issue? What is it that we're saying, the situation that we might be coming and looking at, what difference does it make as a Christian as we approach it? Climate change is a term that's used broadly to describe a range of things which are likely happening because predominantly by our burning of fossil fuels and the increase of carbon dioxide. So climate change includes stuff like global warming, the fact that average temperatures are getting higher, average temperature increase, sea level rise, ice melting, and extreme weather conditions. That's the kind of stuff that's all summed up under what climate change is. Now, I'm not a scientist. You'll know that full well. And we haven't got a climate change specialist to come in and talk to us this morning. But I have got Google. And so what I've sought to do in trying to bring some of this and think about what we're talking about when we're talking about climate change is to find kind of sources and things that we can look at that hopefully we're not going to disagree on over how reputable the source is. Okay, so I've tried to go with things that we can hopefully be reasonably confident in. So as I looked around, I found that actually NASA have got a fair amount of stuff that they've done and brought together research on around climate change. And I hope that we can reasonably confident that that's a reputable organisation who are going to be bringing us reasonable and verified data. So a little clipping from the NASA website. Scientific evidence for warming of the climate system is unequivocal. That the evidence of the rapid change happening to our climate is compelling. The fact that climate change is happening isn't really up for debate in the world of science. It is changing. Our climate is shifting. Also, the fact that CO2 levels are rising, carbon dioxide levels are rising, isn't up for debate either. If you can just about make out the lines on that chart, sorry, it's a little bit fuzzy. But what that chart is, it goes back 400,000 years, and it shows the levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere over 400,000 years. And the little orange arrow is what it was in 1950, and the little white arrow at the top there is what it is at current level, or at least when the graph was drawn. So you can see how it sharply increased, that actually the level of carbon dioxide in the air is the highest it's been in 650,000 years. When we come and think about climate change, we can know a few things that have happened. So the average temperature has increased by 0.9 degrees centigrade since pre-industrial times. The average temperature is 0.9 degrees up. Since 2010, five of the hottest years in terms of average temperatures have been recorded, ever. And of course, that's average temperatures. So there's places in the world that have faced a much greater increase in temperature than just that 0.9 degrees, perhaps more like we're feeling today. So there's places where the impact has been much greater and places where a slight change can make a very big difference. That occurs particularly when we talk about oceans warming and ice melting, where just a small change in temperature can affect things greatly. Between 1993 and 2016, in Greenland, 281 billion tonnes of ice melted every year. 281 billion tonnes of ice melted every year between 1993 and 2016 in Greenland. And so, of course, that has an impact on our oceans. So in the last century, oceans have risen 8 centimetres. For those who like something that's a little bit more visual, rather than just data and statistics, NASA also had some pretty pictures. Here you're looking at the Bering Sea, which for those who are as bad at geography as I am, it's somewhere in between that bit between Russia and the US. You know, our map doesn't usually show you much of it because of where it's positioned. It took me a minute to work out where it was. But that bit between Russia and the US, it's meant to be cold there. And as you can see here, it's pretty icy. And then this is a picture. So the first picture is from 2013 in April, and this is 2018. So this is 2013. And this is 2018. To give you a picture of what's going on there, in 2018, in the winter, there was less ice since written records began in 1850. Normally, the ice covers more than 193,000 square miles of the sea. In April in 2018, it covered 10% of the normal area it should have done. And of course, this affects the whole ecosystem of that part of the world. And of course, when it comes to climate change, snow and ice reflect heat back out into the atmosphere. Sea absorbs the heat. And so with less ice, the sea gets warmer. Another little image for you. Here you're looking at two glaciers, and we're back in Greenland again. This takes a minute to kind of work out what's going on. But if you look carefully at up here on the top left, you'll see a change. And you can kind of see them step back, and you can see how the glaciers receded over time. And on a satellite image like that, it doesn't look like much. But let me explain. These are two of the largest glaciers in Greenland, and this is actually between 1987 and 2017. The upper and the lower glaciers are two of the largest ones on the northwest coast of Greenland. They receded at similar rates in the 1980s and 1990s, about 38 metres and 36 metres a year for the upper and lower. So 38 metres a year, 36 metres a year. But between 2000 and 2014, the upper glacier loss rate zoomed to 364 metres a year, more than three times as fast as the lower glacier, which went to 109 metres per year. The likely reason for the difference is that the upper flows into a much deeper channel of seawater, making it more vulnerable to melting from below as seawater warms. So that's something of what's gone on. So what does the future look like? Of course, the whole part of the difficulty when it comes to climate change is no one can really predict the future. I was chatting with some others who are passionate about this issue, and one of the things I was sent was a video on YouTube, which was from a scientist who looked at the data and was analysing it all and was presenting some, in his case, some quite strong arguments for saying, actually, we're heading towards rapid temperature increase. They're actually saying things are going to change very quickly, that we're already kind of passing the tipping point, and we're going to see huge temperature increases very quickly due to things like the melting snow and the impact that's going to have upon average temperature rises as the Earth absorbs more of the heat of the sun, and saying actually it's coming and there's very little that we can change right now. I felt I couldn't bring you some of those things because it's very hard to get some verified data around that. So I wanted to bring you a few of the things that I can say that I found from a couple of places like NASA. That the seas are rising at 3.2 millimetres a year, that they continue to rise now at around that kind of rate of 3 millimetres a year. As we think about ice and ice melting, there's a prediction that it's likely the Arctic Ocean will be ice-free in summer. That at some point the Arctic Ocean is going to actually be ice-free in summer. There will be no ice there. Anyone want to take a guess at when they think it's likely that the Arctic will be ice-free? Want to take a stab?
2080.
Anyone else?
2050.
Who said that? You're spot on. Yeah. They think likely by mid-century it will be ice-free in summer. So, in my lifetime. The Met Office, the last 3 years, have recorded that average temperatures have been already 1 degree centigrade hotter than pre-industrial times. So the last three have all been 1 degree hotter. For people will probably be familiar from the news with the Paris Agreement, and the aim of that to see rises limited to 2 degrees, to the average temperatures to limit that rise to 2 degrees centigrade. You may be less familiar that also within that there was an aspirational target of saying, oh, if we can manage 2 degrees, we think that's just about doable. But what we could really do with doing is going for 1.5 degrees. That would be the kind of aspirational. If we could limit temperature rises to 1.5 degrees centigrade, that's going to be better for everyone. Anyone want to take a guess as to when the Met Office thinks it's likely we will have a year that average temperatures are more than 1.5 degrees hotter on average? Anyone want to take a guess? Give me a year. 2035. Anybody else? 2025. You're close. They reckon by 2022 we'll have a year that is on average 1.5 degree hotter. Now that's 1 year. What they're talking about in the kind of Paris Agreement is the average temperature. I don't quite know how many years they want an average over, but let's just recognise the last three have all been 1 degree hotter on average. They reckon by 2022 there's going to be a year that's 1.5. You don't have to be a genius to work out where the averages are starting to head. So, yeah, likely by 2022, it's likely to be 1.5, or a year that's reached 1.5. So then what is the difference that Jesus makes as we come and we think about all these issues? Maybe that's all just too much science for you. I'm sorry if it is. But I think we've got to kind of understand what's going on with the world to then come and ask the question, well, what's the difference that Jesus makes as we come and we look at these issues and we think about what is going on to the climate of our planet? We heard read earlier to us Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 to 20, and that's basically where we're going to kind of start and end, really, with that passage. Because in that we heard earlier, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created. Things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authority. All things have been created through him and for him. So as we come and we read those things, we recognise what we believe, that actually in Jesus all things were created. In him all things were created. And not just in him they were created, actually they've been created through him and for him. It very much points us back to the beginning of John's Gospel, John chapter 1. We're familiar with it from Christmas, probably. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. We see that through Jesus, in Jesus, and for Jesus, all things were made. And of course, John 1 is written, designed to point us, to lead us towards Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word. Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. As it says in Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. This world belongs to him. It was created in, through, and for Jesus. This world is his. And you don't need me to tell you that. As we read Genesis, or as Helen read Genesis earlier, we read that he created it good. That God created a good world for us to live in. And we know too that he asked us to care for it. Verse 28 of Genesis 1, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. That we've been given this responsibility to care for the earth that God has created. We also know too, don't we, that not long after Genesis chapter 1, we get to Genesis chapter 3. We come to the fall, we come to sin entering the world. Adam and Eve eat the fruit from the tree of life that they've been commanded not to. And as we read through Genesis 3, we read of the consequences of what they had done, the consequences of sin in the world. And part of that is the consequence in creation itself. In Genesis chapter 3, God says to the man, cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil you will eat from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. Actually, even here we see a sense of actually our broken relationship with creation. Cursed is the ground because of you. Actually, in Genesis itself, we read of how humanity's sin has impacted creation and the world that we live in. And perhaps here we see a sense of the first fruits of what we live in now, and the damage that we go on causing to creation through the way that we live, how we fail to take care of God's world. We recognise we live in a fallen world, and part of that is that we have a broken relationship with creation, that through our actions we do damage what God has made. So we come back to Colossians chapter 1, because Colossians gives us some hope in the midst of this. Verse 19 and 20. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, that is, Jesus Christ, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Jesus came to reconcile to himself all things. He came that our relationships might be restored. He came that our relationship with God might be restored through what he did on the cross. He came that our relationships with one another might be restored through what he did on the cross, that in him we become the family of God, brothers and sisters in Christ. He came that our relationship actually with ourselves might be restored through what he did on the cross, that we might become God's children and recognise our identity in him. He came that our relationship with creation, with what God has made, might be restored through what he's done on the cross. John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. Jesus came for the world, for all that God had created, that it might be reconciled to him. And we look ahead, don't we? Because we recognise that actually our relationships with one another, our relationship with God, our relationship with ourselves, our relationship with creation still lives in something of that brokenness. That we look ahead towards when Jesus will come again, to what's written about in Revelation chapter 21 and 22. When Jesus comes again, and we're told there will be a new heaven and a new earth. When Jesus will come and he will restore all things. We look ahead to that time and we await Jesus to bring that redemption of creation, that new heaven and that new earth. We recognise, as it describes in Romans chapter 8, that all creation is groaning, that creation itself groans as it waits for Jesus to come and bring that redemption. That we live in this now but not yet of Jesus' first coming and awaiting his second coming. But that doesn't mean that we can take our attitude to creation and go, well, it doesn't matter because Jesus is going to come and he's going to restore it all. It doesn't mean that we can ignore that any more than the fact that Jesus has restored our relationship with God means that we can go on sinning. Romans chapter 6 addresses exactly that point. What shall we say then? Shall we go on sinning so that grace may increase? And Paul writes, by no means. You can't possibly do that. You can't possibly say, well, Jesus has sorted it all out, so I'll just go on doing what I want and ignore God because Jesus will forgive me. We can't possibly come and say that because Jesus is going to come and restore all creation, we'll just go on and treat the planet however we want because it doesn't matter. We're called to live our lives now in that restored relationship with Jesus and with his creation, in hope for the future, in hope for what Jesus is going to come and do as we follow him. The two simple commands of which Jesus sums up the law in Matthew 22. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. If we're going to love God with all that we are, that means we're going to take care of what is his. We're going to want to take care of his good creation. And actually, when it comes to thinking about climate change, the second commandment is just like it. Love your neighbour as yourself. Because when we come to talk about these issues, we're not just talking about actually caring for what God has made. Actually, we were talking for others around the world. Climate change has become a justice issue because actually it's the poorest and the most vulnerable in the world who suffer the most from our changing climate. Tear Fund say this: climate change has the potential to push over 100 million people back into poverty by 2030. More frequent storms, droughts and floods mean crops ruined, people going hungry and children missing out on education. From the United Nations. Climate change, it is happening
and today affecting those who suffer the most. You only need to visit countries like Africa to see the devastation that is already occurring through drought and flood. We didn't talk about this hugely when we gave feedback from the group of us who went to Uganda just under a year ago. But it was something that actually we picked up as we spoke to people, as we talked to people, that they were saying things like, the rainy season has normally come by now, and it's not here. This year has been hotter. We haven't had the rain, and our crops aren't growing. It's not yielding what they normally do. It was real people who we met. It put a face to some of those quotes and statistics of real people who are being impacted by the way our climate is changing. And we're talking about people who live as subsistence farmers, people who live by growing what they can grow in what effectively is their garden, and their crops aren't growing. So I doubt in some ways much of this has been new information to you. Maybe some bits and pieces, maybe some things, but I suspect you've heard most of this before, that God created the world and that climate change is a thing that's happening. And maybe it's helping to connect the two together, I don't know. But I think perhaps what we need to recognise is that there are some barriers that get in our way of connecting these things and doing something about it. There are things that seem to stop us. And so I wanted to see if we can address a few of those now. The first is doubts. We doubt sometimes whether this is proven. Whether is this all really true? Can this all really be something that's accurate? And of course, through the kind of the history and the journey we've been on about climate change and the science behind it, there's been some outlandish claims made, there's been some things that have been shown not to be true, and it all adds to that field of doubts and questioning. Something from NASA's website. 97% of climate scientists agree that climate warming trends over the past century are very likely due to human activities, and most of the leading scientific organisations worldwide have issued public statements endorsing this position. Most are saying it's due to what we are doing that the climate is changing. And of course, maybe you like to side with the underdog and you think, well, there's that other 3% who aren't saying it, and I'm in for them. They could be right. And you're right, they could be right. But when we come to this whole issue, it's not, as a kind of scientific theory, it's not something like the theory of evolution, which we can have some fun with, we can debate about, we can look into the kind of the evidence that science has got, we can look at those few scientists that were saying, actually, we think there's some evidence here that suggests evolution might not make sense, that it might not be possible in every circumstance, that you might have some that suggest it and some that doesn't. And we can look at that, and we can analyse all of that. And to be honest, it doesn't matter a great deal what conclusion we reach about it. The problem is, when we come to climate change, is it does matter what conclusion we reach about it. That sitting on the fence and doubting it is in itself a choice to do nothing about it. So whatever doubts you might have in your mind, we've got to recognise that inaction isn't a choice. That inaction is a choice. That doubting it is a decision to do nothing. And actually it's a decision that could have catastrophic consequences. What other things can get in the way? Well, sometimes perhaps we think, well, we're Christians, we should just be telling people about Jesus. That's the most important thing, isn't it? Why would we be concerned and put our energy into thinking about the climate change when actually we should just be getting out there and telling people about Jesus, because that's the most important thing. But the truth is, we really can't compartmentalise our faith in that way. We really can't break it up into pieces like that. And actually, if we really believe what it is we say that we believe, then actually it would be a completely inconsistent approach. If we really believe that God created everything, if we really believe that he's the one who created it and he's charged us to care for it, then we can't just simply ignore creation. We're called not to go and make converts, nor to be converts who just simply acknowledge Jesus Christ, but to be disciples who follow him. And considering our creation and what God has made is all part of what it means to follow him. And actually so much of what it means to live a life of discipleship falls within this. What it means to live a life that isn't greedy. What it calls to mean a modest life. to live a life that cares for others. If we apply all of that to how we look after the resources that God has given, then actually we'll be a long way ahead in dealing with climate issues just by simply not being greedy, by being modest and by caring for others. These things can just begin to fall into place as part of what it means to follow Jesus. And actually, for some, and particularly younger generations now, if we ignore these issues, then actually we'll just look immoral. Because for some who are growing up, believing in God or not, actually caring for the environment has become an important thing. I know a young couple who they've got some vague Christian background, but very little really, who aren't involved in church. But they've decided to go pretty much vegetarian or vegetarian through most of the week, largely through environmental issues. They're that concerned about this. They're that wanting to do something and make a change. Actually, if we don't care, it will become a barrier to our witness. Of course, the other side is true. The other side is also true that actually, if we just simply focus on these issues, on green issues, on environmental issues, then actually it could begin to look like we're worshipping creation rather than the Creator. As we come and look at this, actually what there is an opportunity to explain the reason for the hope that we have. To actually explain why it is that we care. Because actually we believe in justice. We believe we should care for the poor and the marginalised in our world. And actually we've got a reason to do that, not just through some vague humanitarian idea, but we've got a reason to do that because we believe everyone is created in the image of God and has an equal right to life and to prosperity and to live well. Because we believe in a God who created. We want to care for our creation because we believe a good God created it and he created it well. And we've also got a story to explain how we understand how our sin damages creation. And ultimately, the only way to be reconciled is through Jesus Christ, who one day will come and restore all of it. We have a narrative and a story that goes so much further than just simply saying care for the planet. And actually, as we approach these issues, we have an opportunity to explain what that is. Another issue we can sometimes come as we face this, a barrier that can get in the way, is actually sometimes our own judgment of one another. And actually, maybe you're sat here already on one end of the spectrum or the other, either feeling, oh, finally, the church is doing something about this, maybe people will listen and take these issues seriously. Or rolling your eyes saying, oh, I can't believe that climate change stuff is making it into church as well, and thinking about what you're having for lunch today. And we can just begin to judge one another. And this issue has an element of it in which we're weak and we're strong. Some are much further ahead on these kind of issues and able to do much more and feel called to do much more. Others are able to do not as much and don't feel called to put as much of their energy or feel called by God to focus on different areas. And we have to recognise that that's okay. That God calls us in different ways, to different places, to different issues. And we can't sit shouting at one another and judging one another. We can encourage each other. Those who know more can encourage those of us who might see less or know less or where there's simple things that could be changed. A little while ago, we switched from washing powder to using this thing called an eco egg. I'd never heard of it. I think Kate saw it on Facebook or something like that. This thing called an eco egg, it replaces washing powder. It costs less than washing powder and it's better for the environment and it cleans your clothes. I'm verging on being an evangelist for it because it seems so simple. Can we share those kind of things that others might be able to do? Let's not judge someone if they decide to still use washing powder, but it's a simple thing. We've got to recognise that some of us can do more and some won't be able to do as much, but none of us can ignore this issue. Sometimes the cost of change gets in the way, because actually sometimes these things can cost money rather than save it. And of course sometimes they cost time, and when we talk about it costing time, we probably really mean it costs money. And we can sometimes come up in a battle kind of against capitalism and creation, that actually what's more important to us. And certainly it seems around the whole area of Heathrow and building another runway at Heathrow, it seems like capitalism has trumped out on creation, economy against people. That actually the arguments for it are money and the economy. And whilst recognising that there are environmental issues, we're going to do it anyway. I'm not coming down on one particular side of that particular fence. But I'm just trying to make the point that when we come and approach that, we've said the economy is more important. And sometimes perhaps each of us on an individual level do the same. And of course, we don't have infinite resources. We're not all going to go out tomorrow and put solar panels on our houses. But when we come and look at these things, we can't simply let money win out every time. Sometimes we've got to weigh up the cost and decide, actually, can I make a difference by spending some money in this particular way to care more for our environment and for what God has made? Perhaps another issue sometimes is that it seems like it's just too big a problem. This is too big, this is too great, how can I do anything that's going to make a difference? And of course there are some things that we can't do. There are elements of this problem that are just far too big. There are things that need big legislative change, that need governments and governments across the world to work together to see difference and change happen. Of course we're not powerless in that, we have a voice. We're in a democracy, we can speak up and we can speak to people and politicians about these issues. We can campaign, and there's some here who are called to do that and are doing that. But let's not think that we can't make a difference ourselves. That actually, a lot doing a little can have a big impact. Just to wake you up, a little statistic. Anybody want to take a guess as to what percentage of UK CO2 emissions come from households in the UK? Anyone take a guess? What percentage of UK emissions come from households? The bit that we are responsible for together in the way that we live. Anyone take a guess? Barry?
31%.
31%. Anybody else? Sorry? 50?
70.
You just gone high because you know it's going to be surprising, didn't you? It's 40. 40% of emissions in the UK are us lot, are things that we can control. And part of the government's plan in this country to see CO2 emissions reduced is by reducing it from the 1990 level to an aspirational 2030 level. So if you can't quite see down the bottom of there, it's reducing it from 1990, the average was 12.8 tonnes of CO2, or CO2 equivalent, just to give the small print, per household. And in 2030, they want to get it down to 4.5 tonnes per household. And actually, you see, you can't probably quite see it, but one of the biggest things in there is in 1990, 16% of emissions, or equivalent, came from waste and rubbish. And actually, in 2014, they had that down to 4%. That's recycling, basically, and how waste is treated. And obviously, between 1990 and now, we've suddenly got curbside recycling, haven't we? It's appeared for us. And the aim is to get it down to 1% by 2030. There's ways that you can make a difference just in your own house, in the things that you do, in who your energy supplier is, in how you recycle, and all of that kind of stuff. Let's not think that this is too big, that there's nothing that we can do about it. So, as I get towards the end, things that you may already know about, but just some reminders, the things that we can do to take action and make a change in this. Pray. Actually, if we believe this is about us being reconciled to God and his creation, then actually the place for us to start is to pray. Is to do something of what we've done today, is to recognise that our God is the creator and the amazing things that he has made, and worship him for it. To come and to pray that actually he might speak to us, and from that we might get a sense of what we can do and what he's calling us to do as we care for him. To pray and be moved for those who are around the world who are facing the brunt of this change in our climate. Let's begin there. There's some simple things we can do to reduce and to sort waste, to use less plastic, to change the things that we use and how we use them. We can seek to improve the efficiency of the things that we've got, of the appliances that we have and how we use them. From your kettle to your car, there's different ways that we can improve efficiency. Think about things like food air miles. There's veg boxes you can get where most of it's UK grown and never comes through the air. You can eat less meat is a great way of reducing our impact on the environment. Gentlemen, some of us have got to get over that whole thing about if there's not meat in a meal, it's not a meal. Yeah, some of us have got to move on from that. I know it sounds manly, but really, we've got to move on from that. Sorry, that's my thing. We could reduce the things that we use. We can reduce our car use and our flights, particularly flights to Europe where there's other options available. We can replace with environmentally friendly options, whether that's something from simply changing light bulbs to your car, or even, you know, when you buy a house and you get that energy performance certificate, does anyone actually look at that? I mean, I think I didn't find a stat, but I'm pretty sure it's the case that no one really looks at it. Actually, pay attention to those things. and see. And sometimes actually when you get that, it's got really basic things on it that can improve the efficiency of it. There are things that we can do. There are things that we can replace and we can reduce and seek to be as friendly as we can to the environment around us. So what is... And finally, we can campaign. Maybe God's calling you to be a voice for those who can't speak for themselves, to be a voice to those in power to address this issue. The difference Jesus makes to climate change, because all things have been created through him and for him. This is a justice issue. This is about how we care for the most vulnerable in the world. This is a discipleship issue that actually is we follow Jesus, caring for what has been made in him, through him, and for him. Is all part of following Jesus Christ. Let's begin by praying. Lord, we thank you for your word. We thank you for the way it speaks to us, the way that words written thousands of years ago address things that we face in the world today. Lord, we're sorry where we failed to care for what you have made, to care for those around the world. And Lord, now I pray that what you want to speak to us as a church and each individual here, Lord, what it is that you want to say, Lord, you would speak to us. That you'd hold it in our minds. And Lord, that we take action as we follow you. In Jesus' name, amen.